welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 396. My name is James Gilmore. Joining me today is Glenn Fox.
Hello there!
Yeah, I brought it back for one episode only.
Shall we go again? I know you're feeling a bit poorly today, but that's no excuse to backslide.
I'm sorry, James.
You should be. When Em comes back, she's going to be hopping mad.
Oh, yes.
So, episode two of this slightly new formatted podcast. We hope you were okay with the tweaks last week. We're going to continue in the same vein this week, which means newsy stuff, interview stuff, and then a bit of time on the new releases. Again, we had a bit of feedback, but send in more if you've got it, positive or negative, and we will take a look. We're all going to be either A, coughing, if you're Glenn, because he's a bit sniffly and ill.
That's right. Glenn. Yeah, I am.
Or in my case, sweating, because it's what the Spanish or Colombians would call caliente, super caliente.
I mean, really, really hot.
Yeah, it's that. And yeah. Obviously, it's the first super hot days we've had in our British summer. And because we're British, our bodies are unaccustomed to that big glowy thing in the sky.
Yep.
So we just melt and go and complain even more than usual. And so that's what's happening. And I had to close the window to do this podcast.
No,
actually,
I did too.
Sound levels.
It's just madness. I can't handle it, James.
No. Luckily, sweating is a silent activity, so you won't know.
That's true.
Or wouldn't had I not just whinged about it.
Coughing is very loud, though.
And sniffing. Ugh, disgusting. Yeah. All the editing to stop it hitting your beautiful ears, podcast listeners. Don't worry, I won't inflict his disgust.
I am very sorry, guys.
You will be. Gaming subscription services. This really was a conversation that was started way back in 2011, I think it was, with OnLive. The service that appeared, kind of, I think it was Android-powered, but the idea of, hey, sign up to a service for X number of pounds a month, and you'll get access to all of these games, which will be streamed to you, streamed from a remote location to your computer. And it doesn't matter if you're playing on a high-powered gaming rig or a rubbishy old laptop, you'll be able to play it because your computer's not running the game, it's only streaming it from a source. And everyone went, wow, that's amazing. And then nobody used it, and it died.
Poor streaming service.
Yeah, but it was a step in what is probably going to be, not necessarily the right direction, but definitely the future direction. We've seen PlayStation Now do the streaming service, and it's still around. I don't know how well it's doing for streaming all the old PS3 games. I've used it, and it works.
Yeah, aren't they slowly getting rid of it?
Are they? I don't know. I've got no information on that.
Say that 100%, but I heard rumours that they... I mean, it might not be confirmed, but I heard rumours that they're slowly pushing it away, because I don't think it quite took off as much as they thought it might.
I think people are going to have to keep taking runs at this until it works.
Yes.
Which brings us neatly to Sega Forever.
It does, doesn't it?
Which is a rumoured service that someone's pointed out. It was to do with someone filling out a questionnaire via Sega, and then it got passed on to some YouTuber person, and people started looking into it a little bit closer. It appeared late last year sometime, and people were playing an old soft-launched version of a game called Comics Zone, which was like a 1995 beat-em-up that Sega released from way back.
I've played that.
Did you play it? Okay.
It's really good. Love it.
Yeah. Well, it turned up in the Philippines App Store, and this game had references to something called Sega Forever. One of the options being, subscribe to Sega Forever. Newsletters. And you're like, alright, fine. But then when you get the game to actually fire up, you get an option to play the game in ad-free form through Sega Forever. Plus, the options for cloud saves. All of which suggests that Sega Forever may be a streaming game service, a la, as everyone's calling it, Netflix of games.
Okay.
Which is kind of where this is all going. Like, since the Spotify takeover, that everybody uses that now for streaming, and then Netflix and Amazon Prime and all of the other streaming services that people now use in their lives, people are looking for, what's the gaming one going to be? What's the thing that's going to replace buying physical games? And as you say, PlayStation Now maybe hasn't taken off quite the way that the people wanted. We had the problem with OnLive where it didn't really catch on. And I don't know if it's like a mental obstacle that people need to jump over, and that what people would consider hardcore gamers still like the idea of ownership and like the idea of having the physical thing.
Yeah.
Or whether it's tied into the fact that the internet simply can't support it for everybody at the moment. Like, PlayStation Now is fine if you've got like a solid 60 megabytes per second download.
Yeah, I think it's more that, to be honest, because I don't know many people who've got an internet as good as that. Like, mine's only 30 and I'm living in a city centre. I know I could pay the money to get the more expensive one, but I don't know, it's not really my bag, spending lots of money.
Spending lots of money. Well, we are games
That's
people.
True, yeah.
So,
grown-up children.
But in some ways, like the Nintendo Switch, I was saying prior to it coming out that whoever manages to crack the code of, hey, it's a portable thing and it's a home console thing, gets the keys to the kingdom. And in some way, I think that the person who manages to crack or really sell to the mainstream the idea of, like, don't bother buying games, just sign up and you can have all the games for $5.99 a month or whatever. And so it works like Spotify or, you know, Google Music or Amazon Prime or something, that will make a lot of money. But it does require a lot of internet connection, and it does require everybody going, like, I don't really want to own games anymore, I'm happy just to rent things.
Fair, I guess. I mean, would you use one if there was a streaming service?
Well, I used OnLive for a bit to test it, and I used PlayStation Now to play a specific couple of games, old games that I couldn't get hold of, like a Catherine.
Yeah.
I used it to play through that over the course of the week. And it worked fine. If it was normalized, then maybe. But for me, it's always that worry about, well, what if the internet is down, and it's a lot more bandwidth intensive than streaming a bloody, you know, bit of Spotify. And with Spotify, you have the option to download.
True.
So you have that option to put it on your iPod and then leave the building. Whereas, I mean, if you could do that with the games, if you could just, like, subscribe and then download the games and keep them for until you you unsubscribe, that would be more of a sellable option. But is that not what EA does? Do they let you? I don't have an Xbox One. Do they let you, like, download the games on their little subscription service?
Yeah. Works? You mean Games for Gold?
No, that's Microsoft's thing. I'm talking specifically about, don't EA have some early access if you're part of the EA subscribers club?
Yeah, I haven't actually ever used that, to be honest, but I've heard of it. I'm not sure if you get to keep the games.
The conventional thinking here is that mobile gamers might be more up for this than perhaps console gamers would.
Yeah.
So we think they might be trying it. And Sega's willing to give anything a bash, because in terms of, like, it's no longer makes consoles or tech, it's purely just software, and increasingly it's, you know, just trying to repurpose its old software for
new
money.
That's a good point, isn't it? Because, I mean, I don't know what games they're going to choose. I doubt we'll be playing Shenmue or Guides of Arcadia Legends on our phones, but if it's just, like, the old school Sonics and all the, like, Mega Drive games, I can imagine streaming them, you could basically do over 3G even, right?
Yeah.
So, could work.
Or they could just, like, let you download them at source. But the problem for me then becomes lots of the conversions of the old arcade games onto touchscreen are a bit rubbish. We've had, like, Ghouls That's and true. Goblins and all those games, and it's just, it doesn't feel very nice on mobile. The Sonic games were converted quite well, but for the most part, I'm not sure they work brilliantly.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I don't like virtual controls at all, so, yeah. Well, I guess we'll just wait and see. I think it's an interesting thing to try. I think the Switch kind of demonstrated that a handheld that you can take on the go and then also plug into a TV works. Like, you know, for years, many people have been saying that's just never going to happen. So like you said earlier, it does take something just to work to prove to everyone it can work. Maybe this is it.
I think someone will get it right. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
In this rental culture of ours, it's going to happen. And the AAA, you know, £45 for a game that costs $60 million, especially given what's happened last year. I just picked up Dishonored 2 for £8 new.
Mm.
And that was a game that was released in, like, October, November of last year, and is now worthless as far as the market is concerned, less than half a year later.
Yeah.
And that wasn't a cheap game, and it flopped hard, and it just keeps happening at the moment. So I'm not sure that's a sustainable model. Or at least it's only sustainable for a few companies, and everyone else has to find another way to do this, which is why free-to-play happened. That's exactly why it happened.
Yeah.
Well, Sega Forever, if that's what it is, we look forward to seeing it in action and seeing if it works. If not, it could just be, like, you know, something completely different and we've got it totally wrong. What we do know, though, is Monster Hunter XX is coming to the Nintendo Switch.
I'm excited about this one. This is actually one of the big games I couldn't wait for the most, apart from first-party titles that come in Switch.
Well, Monster Hunter is the game that you need on your handheld console to make it work.
That's very true.
Famously, it is the thing that saved the PSP from complete and total collapse.
I didn't know that.
yeah, in Japan, the PSP didn't really shift. As a lot of, you know, some of those, the more Western-focused consoles just don't. Like, you know, Xbox famously doesn't go down well in Japan. People don't buy them there. And the PSP was just like, in Japan, until Monster Hunter 2, Freedom Unite. And suddenly, everybody got a PlayStation Portable, because it was the game to play. And they love their Monster Hunter. Save the console over there. And same thing with the 3DS. It didn't save the console, but it became, you know, it's such a strange franchise. This ludicrously, in some ways, hardcore RPG.
Yep.
With its bizarre interfaces and archaic runes and, like, unforgiving combat and 50-minute play sessions, which shouldn't work for a mobile console. And yet, it's this insanely popular cult franchise that is, and I've, you know, put tens and tens of hours into the various different versions. it continues to attract a rabid fan base, and deservedly so, because they're really good fun.
I think I know why it is.
Why?
I think it's just the gear system is just so damn addictive. Like, always, you're always striving to craft that next powerful thing, and you're on this constant progression loop, and it's really hard to break that cycle, isn't it, once you've got into it?
It's very good if you're a person who likes to set their own goals.
Yes, definitely.
It's a game where it's like you defeat a creature or you see a creature for the first time, you're like, right, I want that armor set.
Oh, yeah.
Give me that armor set. The giant weird spider, I want to wear that spider.
Yeah.
So and then it takes 15 hours of grinding and killing all those different enemies to get the bit, to get the equipment you need, to get the right ingredients to start making the shin pad. And it's just like, it's a long process. And you get distracted along the way, but there's so much to do and hack up. And even though it's the same kind of compulsion loop, it is a hooky one. We should say that XX is basically a pimped-up expanded version of Monster Hunter Generations, which came out for the 3DS. I think, was it last year? Last year, I think it was. Though we have you know, somewhat limited details about it at the moment. Presumably, it'll be souped up a little bit visually and whatnot, in the same way that Freedom Unite was souped up for iPads. Because, I mean, it's interesting. I've seen some people talk about this on Twitter as well. Like, you never really get Monster Hunters made for consoles, as in home consoles.
No, we don't. It used to happen, didn't it?
The Wii U one was
3DS as well, yeah.
3DS, so it's basically the 3DS graphics blown up to big screen.
Yep, that's it.
And it'll be polished up a bit, it'll be higher res, I'm sure they'll upscale, but it's not going to look amazing, don't think. It'll still look
That was a pretty good-looking, for a 3DS game, that was a pretty good-looking Monster Hunter, so I don't think it's going to look bad.
Well, the art design is what they're so good at here.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
The games look beautiful because it's not about how many pixels, it's what you do with them. And they do make them look ever so good, but it would be interesting to see if they ever made a Monster Hunter game for straight consoles.
Yeah, that's right. I'd like to see one on the PS4.
Yes.
Won't hold my breath, but...
I'd like to see that too. But apparently, there is more information to come tomorrow, May 27th, at the Monster Hunter Championship event. So we'll obviously follow that up when we have the deets. But Switch owners, you lucky, lucky people. Now, one of the new releases this week is Subdivision Infinity, which is a space shooter released by Crescent Moon Games. And we had a word with them, specifically the head honcho over there, Joss Pressian, and we had a chat with him earlier on today. So, have that in your ears. Go on. It's early over there in the States, Josh. Thank you for joining us in the morning hours.
Hey guys, thanks for having me. The name is pronounced Precisen. I guess I should have warned you about that one.
It's Precisen.
Precisen, yeah, it's a tough one. It's hard to read, easy to say, but it's a tricky one.
I should have asked in advance.
No, it's fine.
Now, this week, you guys have put out a game called Subdivision Infinity, which is something we've already taken a look at. Before we ask about Crescent Moon in general, this new game, space sci-fi shooter, third-person style adventure, who are you working with in order to put this one out? Because am I right in thinking that, like, the developers of the game are part of, like, a gaggle, a cluster of developers that you have, and then you sort of help them push the games out and publish them? Is that right?
Right, so this game is a game that I published. I didn't, I guess, partner with the developer. It was more of a publishing / marketing and helping them sort of polish it to the end. It was Misfly Games, and they're a new developer. I think they worked at some other companies before, but this is their first game as Mistfly Games, and they're from Russia. So it's a 3D space shooter. It's, you know, pretty intense as far as the amount of ships that are flying at you and shooting at you, and it's got really nice graphics. It just came out Thursday, and you know, people seem to like it so far.
What draws you to specific games? If you're working with developers, and you've worked with like a wide range of games that you publish, when I've looked at it in the past, it seems to be there are two sort of styles that Crescent Moon goes for, which is you've either got big 3D action-adventure style things, like your Raven Sword games, you did at Exiles, this one's a good example, Subdivision Infinity. And then on the other hand, you've got like very lo-fi 2D platformer style games, which, you know, fit into the pixel art camp, I would say.
Yeah, so I guess it all comes down to personal taste, basically. Because I am Crescent Moon Games, so I decide whatever I want to do. And
nice.
I get to call the shots, so to speak. So I really like pixel art platformers. I really like big 3D action games. I'm sort of an action game type guy. I'm not so much into the free to play games, as you probably noticed. I do mostly premium games. Once in a while, we'll try one here and there, but try to focus on the premium because that's what I've, you know, been doing for so long. And I just kind of go after what I like. And if I see a game that I think is great, you know, I do get a lot of submissions, so I go through them and play them all and see if they match the catalog and, you know, what my gut feeling is, basically. That's kind of how it works.
We've had a few favorites over here. I mean, Legend of the Skyfish was an interesting one. That sort of, not quite hookshot mechanic, but that ability to cross across water, and it had flavors of Zelda around it, but it didn't, you know, play like Zelda. It felt like its own thing. And I know things like Aralon and Raven Sword particularly made a big deal, and people have been really amped for the idea of a sequel. And there was footage released, wasn't there? A very different art style it had, but then it's been delayed a little bit. Can you tell us anything about that?
Yeah, so I did have sort of an inkling to do another Raven Sword because, you know, the original ones were successful. The first one, of course, came out on Chillingo long, long, long time ago and was pretty popular. The second one was another sort of big 3D RPG, and then this new one was going to be called Legacy, and it was a different art style, as you said, a sort of low poly, almost cel shaded look. I'm not sure where that's going to go right now, because basically we lost our main designer that was working on it, and kind of put a damper on things a little bit. So, and not only that, the guy who programmed actually both Raven Sword and Aralon and Exiles now has a full-time job, so it's tricky to keep that going. So gears have shifted a little bit, and sort of our main in-house, quote-unquote, development right now is Morphite, which will be out later this year.
Okay. Now, you mentioned earlier that you tend to veer towards premium games rather than sort of free-to-play stuff. Premium's dead, though, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, it is dead, so to speak, but I feel like there's still a little holdout, I guess a little niche of people that still like to play premium games. And you kind of have to know, all right, this game is not going to make maybe as much as a huge free-to-play game. It's going to make a certain amount of money, and you kind of know how much it's going to make. So you kind of have to budget your time and resources when you make the game, you know, knowing that ahead of time. So it's almost, it's a different way of doing things, I suppose. But I don't know. The free-to-play games never really clicked with me, so I couldn't see myself going big with that whole thing.
It's the economics that fascinate me, especially when you're talking about something like, I don't know, The Deer God, which was a really good-looking 2D old-fashioned style platformer. And I imagine that wasn't a huge team of people making that.
No. It was a pretty, really small team, actually. I think, I did the writing for it and some of the art, and then there was a programmer and then another artist. I mean, it was a very small team. But games like that, and you'll find a lot of even the newer indie games are mostly premium. I mean, and Apple seems to be even featuring a lot of the games that come over from Steam and other platforms that are premium games as well. So there's still you know, there's still definitely a place for them, and I'm trying to be in that place.
It's good news from our perspective, because a lot of those games are the ones that we tend to like, and you're always told as critics or whatever that you're sort of out of step with the public consciousness, because people love... Everyone complains about free-to-play games, but they make billions, so people clearly do love them, just not the people I talk to.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a different audience for sure, but there are people that probably play both, you know, so you kind of try to get both if you can, but, you know, it's definitely a tough way to earn money. But, you know, if you're passionate about the game and that's what you are into, then I say just go for it.
And why did you go to mobile? Did you, like, do you do stuff on Steam or other platforms as well, or was it mobile that birthed the idea?
That was the first place I released a game. Was the first game we actually ever released was Ravensword on the first on the App Store 2009.
Okay.
So that was, you know, maybe shortly after the App Store came out. I think it was about a year after or so.
Mm.
And since it was a success, that's what kind of led to Crescent Moon's publishing situation. We left Chillingo shortly after and started helping other developers polish their games. And at first we did a bunch of RPGs because that's what I knew, and expanded out to other types of games, like Paper Monsters was a big game for us, and Gears was a 3D platform puzzle game that was successful. And then, you know, we just started trying different things, and now we have sort of a massive, I say we, but it's really just me. I have a sort of a massive catalog, but I work with many different developers, so it's a lot of different games going on, I guess.
What do you think a game needs to have to work on mobile versus developing for PS4 or something like that? Because we've fallen into certain niches and certain game styles on mobile. Originally, it was like auto runners. And what do you think makes things work on mobile?
Well, I think that's a difficult question to answer, because I think it depends on the type of game that you're going for to begin with. Because I've done sort of big, quote-unquote, console-style games on mobile, it almost defeats the purpose of it being a mobile game in some ways. But I think there are a certain group of people that want to play those games on mobile, so I've tried to cater to those people. And me, myself, I'm interested in those games. So, at this point, there are many different types of games that work on mobile, and I think even console-style games can work on mobile, especially now that we have game controllers that we can hook up to our iOS devices. It helps a lot. And there is another small segment of people that play games with game controllers on iOS and Android, of course. And then there's the Apple TV and Android TVs that are almost like little consoles that can play more console-style games. So I guess in answer to your question, I don't even think there really is a mobile type of game, because you can really do anything you want on mobile.
And what are the next few games you got lined up? You mentioned one of them earlier on. Is there anything else on the cards?
Let's see. We do have a couple games that are in the works right now. There's a little pixel art platformer called Moon Raider, which is by the 2-Bit Cowboy developer, which I'm sure you may remember from before. And that we're aiming to release on PC and mobile at the same time. That's been kind of ongoing. It's a sort of an action platformer, Metroidvania style game. Another one of my favorite genres.
Okay.
And we have another sort of low poly survival game that we're working on. It's almost like a top down Fallout, a little bit more quirky, called Project Apoc, which I've showed a little bit on Twitter, but it's still kind of early in development, so I'm not sure the date on that. And then Morphite, of course, which in the fall sometime is my guess, and it'll hit mobile and all console platforms as well as PC.
Okay.
So that's been our big sort of in-house game we've been working on for over a year now. And after that, I am not sure. I've had a few ideas of what I want to do, but nothing solidified as of yet.
And finally, is there a game that you play that's not yours, not something that you're publishing or producing? Like, if you pick up a mobile phone and just want to relax rather than think about work, what are you playing?
Right. Well, I'm going to turn on my phone right now and see what I'm playing. Yeah, actually, Footy Golf has been my sort of go-to game. Yeah, I love that game. I don't know why, but it just really hooked me. I beat all the levels. I'm waiting for their next update. I don't know when it's coming, but I've been anxiously waiting for that little number at the bottom of my app store. I don't know why. It's just, there's something about it. I love the graphics. I love everything about it. It's easy to play, and I can play it at any time. I just wish they'd made, like, 100 more levels. And let's see. I play Tiny Wings a lot. I still play that game.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, I know. It's really weird because it's so old now, but there's something about that it still gives me that rush feeling when you hit the slope.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Still playing that now, I feel like it hasn't really aged, and it's really a great game. So that's my other go-to game.
All right, Joshua, best of luck with the future releases. Thank you for talking to us today. Take it easy, man.
You too, guys. Thanks a lot.
So, out and about this week, we'll start with what we were just discussing, Subdivision Infinity, space shooter. We've probably covered it all in the interview, and you've played it, I've played it. What say you, Glenn?
I basically have the same problem as you. Positives are, it looks gorgeous, it's nice to fly around space shooting things, but controls just a little bit sensitive, aren't they?
They are quite twitchy. I've encountered a few flight sim games that are like this, and there is a technique. I mean, I should have gone in and checked whether you can adjust the sensitivity, but
you can actually, but it didn't make a massive difference.
The way that you play it, and I describe it in the video, is just that putting your thumb on the screen and then just rocking it around. Yeah. That's the way to, because if you try and slide, you know, those movements are way too big and grand, and you're just, the nose of your ship just zooms off into the distance. So in the end, you should like keep your thumb on the screen, hold it there, and you just kind of roll it around, and that gives you the just about the right level of adjustment to do some fine aiming and do some shooty stuff. And it is, I guess, filling that Galaxy on Fire niche.
Yeah, that's true.
Weirdly late, because had it turned up 2 years ago when we were in that Galaxy on Fire absence, because you'd add one, you'd add two was huge, and that was 2011, I think, and then there was nothing for so long, and then they came out with Galaxy on Fire Alliances, which was when Fish Labs, the studio, had been taken over by another company, and that was like a management game, space management game, not a flight sim that everybody was expecting. And then it was years more until we saw Manticore, which came out late last year on the Apple TV and arrived this year on iOS. So now there is a Galaxy on Fire game again, and now this has popped up, and it's kind of like, you know, similar in a lot of ways to that. So on the upside, it's premium, which is good for people who were upset about the move to free to play. It does all that stuff you would expect it to do, I think, is the best way to describe it. I don't think it's bad. It just is a little bit on the twitchy side. It's pretty slick, but the slickness of the Galaxy on Fire series is notorious, and it's difficult to look better. But I think it does a fairly good job of it. I don't know what Harry's given it. I'm sure he's in the process of reviewing it at the moment.
I don't know. I'm going to have to spend more time with it, to be honest. But at the moment, I'm kind of on the fence a bit, just given that it's tough. I'm finding it quite hard.
Okay. All right, then. Well, it's Subdivision Infinity out right now. iPhone and iPad, £2 and or $99. Now, let's go goofy. There's another Pokemon game. Your cup runneth over with Pokemon Business. You had Go. You had that weird board game that I think nobody played at all.
Oh, yeah. I completely forgot about that.
Remember that board game? Yeah, I did videos on that. And now you have Magikarp Jump.
Yes.
You've played this. What's the deal?
I'm playing it right now, actually, because I like multitasking. But it's really cool. I mean, I'm loath to say it's a game.
sounds like just your cup of tea.
Exactly. It's essentially a clicker without all the clicking. Although there is a bit of that. Right, okay, so basically, picture the scene, James, right? You got a pond, you got a Magikarp in it, right? He floats around the pond just doing his own thing, and then you see food on the pond, you tap on it, he eats it, and that increases his jumping power. And the entire game is based around growing the Magikarp's jumping power so you can beat other Magikarps in a jump-off.
Right.
You can go do training sessions, so he does, like, practice jumps, practices pushing things, and loads of different other training stuff to grow it. And then you head up, face off into the league, which is about 8 leagues with about 8 or 10 battles or something in each of them. You jump higher than another Magikarp, you win, you get to progress to the next round. And that's basically kind of the entire game. But the compulsion loop is your Magikarp can only get to a certain level, so there's a limit to how high his jumping power can get.
I see.
So you can't progress in the league. But as soon as you reach a point in the league where you can't progress anymore, that Magikarp then retires and you level up as a trainer And every single time you level up as a trainer, you can get a Magikarp that can level up higher. It is a lot like a clicker in that sense of like you are starting again over and over and over and again with a higher Magikarp next time. And there's loads of stuff to unlock, like decorations for your pond, which give like upgrades for your jumping power. Other Pokemon do appear and sort of sit on your pond side and shout like nice things at your Magikarp to make him feel better and jump higher.
That's what I heard. Doesn't your old retired Magikarps like appear in the background,
that's
swimming
true.
About and that?
Yeah, yeah. I've got. I can see my first generation Magikarp now, just sort of hanging around the back. Yeah, they do swim around. You see them a lot. You can tap on them, and then also while you're swimming around, you might get visited by another Pokemon who will cheer you and give you some more food or just an extra jumping power. Just like lots of random events happen.
But to confirm, the jumping and the boxing and all the training stuff that your Magikarp does, you don't actually do it, do
no.
you?
Yeah, you just
you watch it happening.
Yeah,
and
you're a trainer, so you just order him. So you say like, go train on that thing or jump now, Magikarp, and that's all you really do. So yeah, it's a very hands-off experience. But as you said, I love that sort of thing. I just want to. Mobile game that plays itself is a bit fun. It's silly. It's really silly.
It looks it. And Harry is really conflicted about it in the review, where he's just like, it's the daftest thing.
Yeah,
you basically do nothing. It's really surreal. It doesn't make any sense at all. But somehow it's still quite entertaining.
Yeah, it's very entertaining. I've been thoroughly enjoying my time with it. It's not hard. It's easy. There's lots to do. It's just nice and fun, and it's really colourful, and it's all the like little skits that happen in between things are quite amusing. So it's definitely entertaining. Whether it's a game or not, I'm not entirely sure. But whatever it is, I'm down for it.
You're still playing it, so
there is that. Yeah.
Well, the review will be up on AppSpy shortly, and the review is also available on PG, and that's free to download. Magikarp Jump is the name. Iron Blade from Gameloft. Oh, colon Medieval Legends, I think it's called.
Yeah.
Yes, that says it all. Well, it's not awful. So to say what it is, I think we've both played this. It is a hack and slash game which uses combat in the same way that Arkham Asylum does and Shadows of Mordor does. It's that brawler, large crowds of enemies whom you bounce between, going bam, 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 building kind of combos. By bouncing off of all of them and blocking where necessary to continue your combat chains. It is set in a medieval time. It's like Crusades era. So you come back from the Crusades to Paris at the beginning. You're in France. And then you have to go and hack up some dudes. It's very, very streamlined.
Yeah.
So instead of having loads of buttons, like different types of attacks you can do, it is just tap anywhere on the right-hand side of the screen to attack and tap anywhere on the left-hand side of the screen to block or parry, and then there are a few special attacks in the middle of the screen that you can use, like big volleys of flaming arrows and stuff. But when it comes to the games, like, the combat is broken down into very, very small chunks of scenarios. So he'll run into the village, but you don't control him. He runs into the city, and then you're presented with like four enemies. You kill them all, slash, 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 and then the screen just fades to black. And then it fades up again, and then you're like further down the city and you just attack a new bunch of guys, probably more of them, probably stronger. And it does that three or four times, and that's the level.
Well, what do you think? Do you like it?
It's not, well, it's, thing is, it feels unfinished to me.
Yeah.
It feels like it's still in soft launch. The combat is sort of fine. It's actually better than some attempts at this have been on mobile. For me, like, when they try and bring Arkham Asylum over onto mobile, they end up putting, like, the four buttons in the lower right-hand corner of the screen, and they're too small, and it just doesn't, you know, I've spent the whole time going, ugh, this needs a controller. So dividing it into just, like, tap anywhere on the screen to attack, simplifying it and streamlining it makes sense, so that's good. The downside of it is that it's very shallow, and that the whole presentation and animations and the way the camera moves, especially when it's doing finishes, it's just all a bit ropey. It feels like it's still in beta. It hasn't been finished. The visuals look a bit shabby. The camera just focuses on nothing at times. Whenever they do a finishing move, it's just like the camera looks into the corner of the room and stays there looking at nothing, which
so
is kind
true.
Of rubbish. And everything's just a bit jaggy and the textures are kind of nasty. And it just has that whole, like, it works. And I get what they're doing by streamlining it. I think that's kind of the right thing to do. But in doing so, it's become a bit shallow and a bit yanky for me.
Yeah, I agree. And I didn't really, I never kind of got the hang of the blocking and parrying system. Sometimes I got sort of perfect parries and got to sort of insta-kill people, but other times it would just block. And I know there's probably a sweet spot in terms of timing, but I don't feel it was very obvious. I think a lot of people are going to struggle with that.
Maybe. Well, it is free to download, and it's Google Play as well as the App Store. Iron Blade, it's called, although I take issue with that because I thought most blades were steel, but whatever, maybe I'm wrong. Should mention the footy ball. Pro Evo 2017's out.
It's good, isn't it?
I haven't played it. Well, I played it way back when it was a soft launch. I haven't played it since. You surely have, though.
Yeah, I've been playing it a few weeks. I quite like my football games, especially on mobile. And yes, it's just way, way better than FIFA Mobile. And, like, it's in the sense that it's actually a football game.
Yeah.
Which is nice. Well,
the Android reviews have been through the roof because it's been out for, like, you know, soft launch for a while. And I think it's partially a response to just people going, oh, I can play a whole football game, amazing, rather than just doing a little New Star Soccer one tap or what they did with the most recent FIFA.
Yes.
So people are very, very happy about that. But it's still free to play, isn't it? It's not a premium release.
No, that's true. I mean, because they're going down the same old, I don't know what it's called in PES, but they're doing the Ultimate Team thing, so you're... There's right. lots of free-to-play elements to it, but yeah, the initial entry is free.
Okay. So people are excited about it. We should mention that on the App Store, we've had a few people complaining that they can't enter the game. There's server problems connecting to the networks, but I imagine that's just teething issues for it appearing this week, and it'll probably be sorted quite soon. But Pro Evo 2017, check out our, you know, hands-ons, our previews, and all the stuff we've been covering on it for a while now, plus a review eventually. Thumper, we talked about it before. I said it was really great. It's now out on Switch. You've played it. How does it hold up?
Did you play it in VR mode quickly just before I...
No, I didn't. I did not. I don't have VR, so just PS4 with a normal screen.
And what were your feelings on the game generally?
I love it. I think it's phenomenal.
Okay, cool.
I think it's one of the games of the year of that year.
Wow.
Because it's incredibly unique, visually stunning. I like rhythm action stuff anyway.
Yeah.
But it's such a strange mixture of genres that, like, on the rails, super simple, stripped-down controls, fiendishly hard as it progresses, with these trippy-ass psychedelic visuals, weird bosses, and, like, weird horror undertone. It's
yeah.
I showed it to a friend of mine over the weekend, actually, just, like, to start playing it, and reminded all over again how it's absolutely wicked. What were your thoughts?
I gave it an 8 out of 10.
Okay.
Reviewed it on Pocket Game. I thought it was a great game. As a rhythm action game, it was really cool, and I really liked the aesthetics. I thought it was really unsettling, and like you say, I can see the horror elements.
Mm.
But I do think that I haven't played it in VR mode, I should say, but I feel like I would have been way more impressed if it was in VR.
Mm-hmm.
I played it on Switch and docked in TV mode, and I just kind of felt like it was losing a level of immersiveness that I think VR would have brought to it, and it kind of felt necessary to the experience. And there are a few different reasons for that. Like, one being I struggled to see some of the obstacles or the markers that you have to press the button on until they were right in front of me.
Right, okay.
It made some boss battles really, really tough because I just couldn't see and react fast enough.
Well, my concern with it being on a handheld format is purely sound. Like, because it's a rhythm action game. For me, you need to be pushing it through big speakers or whacking it on headphones nice and loud because the soundtrack is phenomenal. It's not like even, not melodies. It's mostly kind of, it's very, very industrial and crunchy and quite scary in places.
Yeah,
and obviously I play it through speakers pumped super loud and nasty. If you're playing it on a Switch, and you're not doing it through headphones, and all you're hearing is coming through the speakers or something, that's going to be rubbish. Or certainly it's going to be missing the point of the game. You need to have headphones on or having it on, you know, on a big TV through big speakers.
That's true, actually. The sounds do help a lot. I played it with headphones, and I never actually played it without them, so I can't speak to that. But you're right. People will be doing themselves a disservice if they don't have a decent pair of headphones.
Yeah, totally. But still an 8, that's healthy.
The long and short of it is, if you can't play this on any other platform, like, definitely get it on Switch because it's well worth playing. But if you can get it on a platform that, you know, has VR capabilities like PS4 or PC, I'd probably recommend trying out that one instead.
Okay. All right. And, well, Thumper, that's out right now. And I imagine it's around the, so was it £15, £19, something like that? grab that now if you like. And finally, Jaipur, which is a card game, which you don't, you know, usually focus on loads, but I played this as part of a tips video that we were doing. We've kind of partnered up on Pocket Gamer with Asmodee, who are a publisher of most of the tabletop style digital board games.
Yep.
That get released on mobile. And so we've decided to work with them to create like a table tap section, which is what it's called, table tap, over on Pocket Gamer. And so I've been doing some tips videos for games that are released. And Jaipur came out this week. And I surprised myself again by having a lot more fun with it than I was expecting. Because I was like, I don't know anything about this game and I've not played the board game, so shrug. But it's kind of a marketplace trading game.
Okay.
Where you are competing against another merchant to pick up cards from the center of the table. There's like five cards on the table and you have to grab items. So like tea, gold, diamonds, all stuff that you would trade in. And then build up decks. Once you have two or more of a particular kind of card, you can trade them in. You can sell them for cash. And then tokens are taken. There's a big cash stockpile on the left-hand side of the screen. And you can take cash from that. If you sell in large amounts, you get bonuses for doing so. So if you've got three cards, you'll get the price for each of the card, and you'll get a little three-point bonus for selling three at a time. It's likewise four and five. So the idea is to shift your stock in bulk, ideally. Also, sell it first, because the first time you sell an item, if you sell diamonds, it might be worth like 7 points. But then if you, once you've sold two or three sets of diamonds, the price drops, because presumably like you're saturating the marketplace. That's how I viewed it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds a bit dry, but it's actually very colourful, very quick to play. You blast through them, and like you can play entire rounds in like 10 minutes if you're rattling through it all. And just quite good fun. Like, I enjoyed it way more than I was expecting to, looking at the screenshots. Harry liked it too, 8 out of 10, and said sort of like more interesting than the source material might suggest it would be, because like trading game, marketplace trading, I just immediately go and start nodding off when I hear stuff like that.
Yeah, me too.
But no, quite good fun. I enjoyed it. So Jaipur is out on iPhone and iPad right now. Which brings us to the end. Once again, thank you all for listening. We will be back next week with more Pocket Gaming related news and stuff. Glenn, I hope you're feeling a bit better by then.
Thank you, I hope so too.
And everybody out there, enjoy the sun while it lasts and go play some games, and we'll see you next week. Take it easy.
Have fun, dudes.
Bye-bye.
Bye.